You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon. It's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. She's fast enough for you, old man.
TheForce.net and RebelScum.com present the weekly Forcecast. And now your hosts, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome to this week's Forcecast, your weekly dose of Star Wars. We are the official podcast for TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. This episode for September 22nd, 2006. I'm Jason, and with me always is Pete. Pete, we got a full show this week.
Jam-packed.
Absolutely. This week's episode is brought to you by Official Picks. For official, authentic Star Wars autographs and photos, look no further than officialpicks.com. That's picks with an X, .com. We got a lot of news to cover this week. We're going to try to pick up some of the slack from our sort of, wasn't really a half a show last week. It was more like a three quarters of a show last week. And a brand new Cantina segment this week.
We're going to be joined in the Cantina by Star Wars artist Joe Caroni. I'm sure you've seen his work in Star Wars Insider, the latest issue, number 89, as well as all over hyperspace.
Joe's going to be stopping by to talk to us, and we'll have that interview spread over the next two episodes of the Forcecast. We're going to start out and kind of talk a little bit about a story that we mentioned briefly last week. Movies.com is having their Fan Choice Awards, their first annual Fan Choice Awards, and we noted that TheForce.net is nominated for Best Unofficial Movie Website. Well, I was on vacation. That's my defense. I didn't realize just how many nominees had some relevance to Star Wars. Not only is Revenge of the Sith nominated for Favorite Movie, it's also nominated for Favorite Action Movie. Star Wars A New Hope, Episode 4, is nominated for Favorite Opening Scene. The Empire Strikes Back gets a nomination for Most Surprising Ending. Favorite Actor, nomination for Harrison Ford. Favorite Actress, parentheses, Most Likely to Succeed, Julia Roberts category. We've got Natalie Portman and Keira Knightley. Favorite Director, George Lucas. Star Wars gets a nomination for Favorite Franchise. And the Hottest Upcoming Male Actor, the nomination goes to Hayden Christensen. And Hottest Upcoming Female goes to Keira Knightley. And again, Favorite Unofficial Movie Site goes to TheForce.net. Now, StarWars.com gets a nomination for Favorite Official Movie Site. And they had a pretty good story about all the different nominations there at the official site. But where's the love for TheForce.net?
We've got to get some.
I mean, for crying out loud, I mean, we do nothing but plug stars.com all day long on this show and all over Rebel Scum and all over TheForce.net. If you're listening out there at StarWars.com, give us a little love. Mention TheForce.net is nominated for Best Unofficial Movie Site. And a bit of sad news this week.
We'd like to offer our condolences to the family of James Earl Jones, veteran Star Wars actor, whose father passed away this week at the age of 96. Robert Earl Jones had a very distinguished career himself, and we do wish our condolences out to the whole entire family.
Absolutely. But, hey, we got all kinds of news for you this week, so let's get right to it. Punch it!
I have good news for you, my lord.
That's good news.
Come closer, I have good news.
And our first story for this week, Star Wars Saga Young Guns, the duo of Jake Lloyd and Daniel Logan, will be attending the Dallas Comic Con this October 28th and 29th. Both will be signing exclusive limited edition photos provided by Official Picks, our sponsor for this week. Star Wars artists Kat Staggs and Tom Hodges will also be at the show. For more information, check out the official website for the Dallas Comic Con. We will provide a link on our show notes for this week. For these kids being as young as they are, although Jake Lloyd, I mean, they're both a lot older than they were when we did the films.
Right.
If you remember when we went to Celebration 3, we attended Jake Lloyd's session, and he was really entertaining.
Yeah, he had a lot of really good things to say, and he was a really good sport about a lot of it.
Absolutely. He was playing a, they actually had a contest where he was playing the pod racing game against some little kid. I think Jake was actually pretty good. He was holding his own, but
actually Jake stomped him pretty good because he had talked about how he played so much that he was really good at it.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He was playing it and just kind of talking to other people and doing just random things while this kid was trying really hard.
That's right. Okay.
But they gave him the prizes anyway and all that kind
of
stuff.
What show was I at?
Yeah.
But anyway, he was really, really down to earth, and his memory about the shoot at episode one is not real good. He admits that he was, 8 years old, 9 years old
right.
at the time, but there are some stories that he remembers fairly vividly, but he's just a great sport, and so he's a good one to see. Daniel Logan, also somebody who's just unbelievably nice and couldn't be happier to be part of the Star Wars community, really.
Yeah, I think every time we walked by his booth, he was out there taking a picture with kids or doing something else where he was just entertaining for the crowd or interacting with the crowd.
He was grabbing those Master Replica sabers and running around and having fights with people, and it was really, really cool. So if you're in the Dallas area or you're planning to attend Dallas Comic Con, definitely stop by and talk to Jake and Daniel, both really good guys.
And we have some big news from our sponsor, Official Picks. They are announcing that beginning on October 1st, they will be introducing a new line of collectible 30th anniversary character archive photographs that will be available in a new 5x7-inch format. The new 5x7 images will be available both individually and as collectible sets. And as an added bonus, customers who ordered the 12-image set will get a bonus 13th piece that is only available with that set. The new 5x7-inch comes in response to the many customers who asked for something smaller than the standard 8x10-inch photographs. These new photographs will be available at the lower price of $2.99 each or $29.99 for a set of 13 with a new protective binder. Check out officialpicks.com for images of the photographs as well as pictures of the binder.
This is actually really a neat item. I'm thinking about picking this up myself, actually.
Yeah, and it really makes a lot of sense because it's something that can easily be thrown in the mail. You stick it between a couple cardboard pieces, you stick it in the mail, you send it out to Samuel L. Jackson or Frank Oz or whomever, and they sign it, they send it right back to you, and it's a nice, neat little small thing that doesn't cost an arm and a leg to send out there to them.
And when you're trudging through the convention floor, it's also a little bit smaller to carry than the, 8.5x11 photos typically.
Right. You get two photographs to a page as opposed to just the one. So.
Right. So great item and great news from our sponsor, Official Picks. And fans of the Star Wars parody film Spaceballs are rejoicing this week. The announcement was made that G4 Cable Network, along with MGM, has commissioned an animated series based on the hit Mel Brooks film. Brooks will be supplying voices for two characters, including President Scroob and Yogurt. So this is supposed to come out this fall. This was sort of late-breaking news for us here at the Forcecast. We wanted to squeeze this in because I was pretty pumped about this when I heard it.
Yeah, it's going to be a little more expansive than what I was expecting when I first read the headline. It's going to be an hour pilot plus 13 half-hour episodes to follow in behind it. So they're obviously going to expand a little bit more in the Spaceballs universe and I'm sure take on a lot more than just the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm anxious or actually surprised to hear that this is happening. I know that when Brooks made the film back in, 1987, I think that was, he was parodying Star Wars, and at that time, you didn't see a lot of that. It's not like today where you got all the fan films and you got fan fiction and you got blogs and you got podcasts like ours.
Right.
Lucasfilm was a little bit tighter with the property back then. And I know that the stipulation was made, I think, at the time that, no merchandising, which led to that very funny scene in the film.
Yeah, well, I fully expect that there will be no merchandising for this animated series either.
Well, anyway, we're happy to hear about that. Anything that keeps Star Wars on the map.
Charles Ross's critically acclaimed one-man Star Wars show invades Charlotte, North Carolina on October 14th. The high-energy one-hour cyclone through the original trilogy film stars only Ross as he plays all the characters, flies all the ships, and sings all the music. In conjunction with the performance, the Charlotte Fan Force will be hosting a food drive where for either a can of food or a dollar donation, guests will be able to have a photo taken with Star Wars characters provided by the Fan Force or the Carolina Garrison of the legendary 501st. All proceeds benefit the Second Harvest Food Bank. Also, if you're a fan in the UK, you'll get a shot to see the one-man Star Wars show in November when the show invades Edinburgh's West End Garrick Theatre. The show will be on the stage November 6th through the 11th, and be sure to keep your eyes and ears open for shows in your area, as you won't want to miss it when it comes your way. Now, going back to this Charlotte story, this is yet another example, like we've talked about numerous times on the show, of Star Wars getting out in the community and helping out. You know, also of note that's coming up fairly soon, the Oklahoma City Collectors Club, they're going to be holding a fundraiser as well, where they're going to have an evening where they're going to get everybody together in the area. They're going to give out prizes with a lot of really cool prizes, some of them provided by people like Master Replicas, Steve Sansweet, our own official picks, have all donated gifts for that evening. So if you're in that area, go ahead and head over there. But there's always going to be examples of that where Star Wars is going to be out in the community. They're going to be helping out either one of their own members or people in general, like doing a food drive. And it just is amazing to me how this continues to show up every single week.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I think we've had one of these stories, at least for the past 4 weeks, something like this. So what we're talking about is there's going to be a charity presentation of the One Man Star Wars play or show, I guess you'd say act, whatever. When is that going to be?
That will be October 14th, so coming up fairly soon. So if you do want to get into the area that down there, need to make sure you get out and get your ticket soon. And again, this is a can't-miss show. You've got to make sure that if you're in the area, you can make it over there. You definitely need to see it because it gets nothing but great reviews.
And we also have the charity for one of the Collectors Club members who's been having some health problems recently.
They noted in there that he had a stroke and had a relapse on that. And anybody who's had to been through that, I know I have. When a friend or a family member goes through that, that's a very difficult time. And so, again, it's a great time. Not only do you get to go out, enjoy yourself, have a possibility of winning a great prize, but you also have the greater duty of helping out somebody in the community that really definitely will need your help.
Information regarding both of these events can be found in our show notes at theforce.net. MovieWeb.com made some waves this week by posting a story that quoted a section from TV Guide columnist Michael Osello's latest Q&A. The question posed was, quote, "I ran into Edward Furlong at IHOP in Hollywood, and when I asked what was next, he said, quote, 'Some CSI and then maybe the Star Wars TV series, man. Is that right?' Osello's reply was, 'The CSI part is right. He'll guest star in CSI New York's third episode, but that's the first I'm hearing about him possibly starring in the small screen Star Wars.'" Okay, folks, file this under extremely unlikely or extremely speculative. We haven't gotten real clarification on what the status of the live-action series is. We know that Rick McCallum is tapped to produce it, much like he did the Young Indy series. We know that they're waiting on George to actually write the first season, I believe, the first 100 hours of the show. So who knows? Who knows?
Right. And something like this always pops up. You know, I can remember back to when Episode 3 was in production, and they were talking about the voice of General Grievous, and John Rhys Davis, who was in the Lord of the Rings trilogy,
right,
came out, and he said something off color about that, something along the lines of, well, maybe my next project will be something Grievous or something like that. And everybody speculated that it was him, and turned out it wasn't. It was Matthew Wood.
Right.
And there's always something about that. You know, there was the casting that they were already casting Vader for the show.
Oh, that's right. That was a few months ago, or quite a while ago, where apparently there was some casting call that went out for a guy such and such height to play Darth Vader in the TV series. And,
right.
And I don't know where these things start.
Right. And we don't even have confirmation that Vader's actually even going to be in the series, let alone to them casting it. I mean, it's possible, but I always take those things with a grain of salt.
Right. You can file this one right next to the Charlton Heston was going to play Yoda.
Europe's biggest movie and media event, Collectormania, returns to Middleton Hall in Milton Keynes in the United Kingdom for the weekend of September 29th. For the 10th time, the event will bring in a gathering of celebrities and guests from all genres of film and from all corners of the earth. Highlighting the weekend will be several guests from the Star Wars trilogies, such as David Prowse, Kenny Baker, Rusty Goff, and ForceCast favorite Jeremy Bullock. Other notable guests include James Bond, George Lazenby, Firefly's Adam Baldwin, Aliens Lance Herkinson, Oompa Loompa, Deep Roy, Simpsons Marsha Wallace, and scores of other great guests. Log on to CollectorMania.com for a full guest list and ticket information.
Wow, that sounds like a really cool, eclectic group of of stars for the show.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of great people that are going to be there. And I try not to ever be jealous of people in Europe because they don't get all the great stuff that we do. And I apologize to our UK fans that they don't get some of the great stuff that we do. But I have to say I am a little bit jealous of what's going on. I mean, there are all those great Star Wars guys, and there's even a couple other ones like Biggs, Garrick Hagen, and Commander Pagi, George Rubik. So there's a lot of Star Wars people as well as some other great guests all across different places. Although they will miss out on Wallace Shawn as he was scheduled to be there but won't be there.
Oh, okay.
And I have to say that only in the Star Wars universe can someone who was cut from the film, like Biggs, be a celebrity guest.
Star Wars alum Harrison Ford features in our headlines this week. The actor will be the subject of an onstage interview by Dick Cavett at the Aspen Film Festival on September 30th. Ford will also receive the festival's Independent by Nature Award. A dinner will be held after the interview, with proceeds going to the Aspen Film Festival. Ford was also noted in a poll on ZNews.com for being the man that women would, quote, most want with them on a world trip. Well, his character of Indiana Jones, anyway. Ford also came in third with his characterization of Han Solo. The number two slot was filled by James Bond. Okay, I got a trivia question for you. This is pretty easy. So you got these top three movie characters or, you know, heroes, pop culture icons that women would most want to take with them on their world trip. Number one, Indiana Jones. Number two, James Bond. Number three, Han Solo. What's the connection between all three of these?
They are all movies.
Well, no.
Is that right? Is that right?
No.
Oh.
Obviously, Harrison Ford played two characters, Indiana Jones and Han Solo. But James Bond, according to George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, is the only man that could have fathered Indiana Jones. And check out our show notes at theforce.net and rebelscum.com for links to all the stories we talked about.
Where are you going, Master?
For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
And we're joined in the cantina this week with Star Wars artist Joe Caroni. Hey, Joe, welcome to the cantina.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Doing just fine. Hey, Joe, why don't you kind of give the listeners an idea of who you are and why that name, Joe Caroni, probably sounds familiar to them.
My name might sound familiar, I guess, if you're a Star Wars fan, Star Wars art fan. I guess I've done a lot of Star Wars art over the years for various projects for Lucasfilm and all their different publishers like Wizards of the Coast, Star Wars Insider, Dark Horse Comics, West End Games, a lot of different publishers that do Star Wars books and games and comics and trading cards for Tops and stuff like that. So,
right, okay. Well, and you've been working with Lucasfilm since when?
Well, I actually started illustrating Star Wars back in 1996 for West End Games, a Star Wars role-playing game.
Okay.
So I was doing artwork for a couple years for West End Games, doing illustrating role-playing game books and the adventure journals and stuff like that that they published, and that was all artwork that was approved through Lucasfilm and Lucas licensing. So
okay, well, let's start back sort of at the beginning for you. When did Star Wars enter your life?
Wow, I grew up with Star Wars. It entered my life really early. I was 4 years old when, in 1977, when A New Hope, well, I guess it was just Star Wars then when that premiered.
And it's just Star Wars now with the release of the DVD.
Right,
back
right.
To just regular old Star Wars.
Right. I mean, everyone calls it Episode 4 A New Hope now,
right.
But, you know, back then it was just Star Wars to me, so, but,
Now, you were only 4 years old.
Do you
actually remember going to the theater to see it?
Oh, yeah. I definitely remember. I mean, I have vivid memories of Darth Vader, you know, when he storms through the doorway on the blockade runner. I mean, that gave me nightmares. I mean, not extreme nightmares,
right,
but,
right.
You know, I... When I was a little kid, you know, I thought he was some kind of demon. I didn't know he was like a guy in a suit. I thought
right.
He was some kind of robotic demon thing. So, you know, that was pretty freaky, you know, when you're a little kid seeing Darth Vader swarm around.
Did you run into mom and dad's bedroom saying that Darth Vader was in your closet?
Well, no, not. I wasn't that scared. I mean, but, you know, it was. It did give me a couple nightmares, I remember. And then, you know, and then other vivid memories like the, I don't know, like Chewbacca even. I mean, that really stood out. So, I mean, I remember being in the theater and seeing Darth Vader for the first time, and I remember seeing Chewbacca for the first time and just being blown away by all these, like, amazing characters. So,
right.
I definitely remember seeing the film, and a lot of things stood out and stuck with me, obviously, over the years.
Well, the first our first episode, we had a composer on, Steve Parsons, and Steve started out as very early. It was very obvious that he had some musical talent. Now, you're a graphic artist, and I asked Steve, I said, well, did the music have an effect on you when you first saw Star Wars? I mean, was it similar experience for you where the visuals of Star Wars kind of made you start thinking? When did the connection happen with the art?
Well, I mean, yeah, it was definitely, from a visual standpoint, it really kind of seeped into my subconscious, I think, over, you know, the course of my childhood. I guess where it started, probably after I saw the movie, I was also just at that age getting into comic books. So my mom, for my birthday that summer, that July, bought me the Marvel Comics adaptation of Star Wars. So that was like one of my very first comic books, actually, if not the first, I can't remember. But it was one of my first comic books, and I ended up drawing from the comic books, like basically taking paper and looking at the panels and drawing the Star Wars characters on paper, and, you know, right from the comic book and from my memory, trying to, you know, recreate some of the scenes. So I think just, you know, it really inspired my imagination as a child, and I think a lot of artists my age, you know, from my generation, I mean, almost, you know, artists and filmmakers and musicians, I mean, everyone can kind of trace back their creative roots, you know, to that first time they saw Star Wars.
Right.
It's I think that's a common occurrence in a lot of artists that are my age. Or,
and of course, you would go on to actually illustrate Star Wars comics of your own.
Right, yeah, and I did. I mean, I used to draw my own Star Wars comics, my own, you know, superhero comics. I used to make up all my own Star Wars characters, and I mean, I still do. Just now, I get paid for it. So.
Right,
well, which is really cool.
Kind of go through that the story of how you got started with Lucasfilm and with Star Wars, getting paid to do Star Wars is a pretty good story. So, kind of fill us in on how that all came about and how that's kind of filled you through to here.
Well, I guess it all started officially when I graduated from art college. I just wanted to do Star Wars art for Lucasfilm or one of their publishers, and I was already, during college and even during high school, I was playing the Star Wars role-playing game with my friends, and I had all those books. I had all the Western game books, and I collected them and stuff, once in college, I started doing artwork I was actually being published professionally while I was still in school, doing artwork for another role-playing game company. And so then I thought, well, you know, why not? How about I just send my portfolio to West End Games and see if I can't get them to, you know, maybe give me some freelance work. And that's kind of and that happened right after I graduated, actually. I sent them a portfolio, and it took a couple tries, but they ended up calling me and giving me an assignment, and I did my first Star Wars art for a role-playing game book called No Disintegrations, I think. It was about bounty hunters and stuff. So.
Do you remember the very first picture that you...
My first official Star Wars picture?
Yeah, your first official Star Wars picture, yeah.
I drew some alien, actually, in that book. He looked like a cross between a... Oh, I don't know, like a plant or something. So, like,
so
yeah, but
an,
I remember,
expanded unit,
I remember
it was an EU character. It wasn't a character from the films then.
Right. It was an expanded universe character that they had created for that particular adventure. And
you're thinking,
I just remember doing that.
Couldn't they have given me Boba Fett or somebody like that?
Yeah. Well, I actually had to pay my dues. I mean, I'm still paying my dues, I think. But yeah, when I first started for West End Games, yeah, I wanted to do a lot of the main characters, and every once in a while I got to, but not very often, because with the role-playing game stuff, it's fleshing out the expanded universe, so it's very background, side information, and side characters, that kind of stuff. So, which was just as fun for me, because I remember doing that very first Alien illustration, and just like, you know, I just had to, you know, I looked at it and I was like, wow, you know, and I was like, I couldn't believe I was doing Star Wars. I gave that artwork to my mom, and that was my very first Star Wars thing, and wow. I finished it and gave the illustration to my mom, and I think she still has it framed somewhere. But
it's like framing your first dollar in a way.
Exactly. That's a great analogy. And it's just like a little Star Wars alien drawing, but to me that was sort of like my first step into the, you know, larger universe kind of thing.
Right. So. And then how did you started out with the role playing game back when?
Yeah.
And who was doing that at the time? Was it Wizards?
No, it was West End Games.
West End.
And I worked for them for 2 years, and I probably did like 10 or 12 different books for them. And
roughly how many illustrations per book would you have done?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, a lot, that many?
Hundreds, I think.
Oh, my
yeah.
gosh. Oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
I mean, a lot of pen and ink and a lot of color towards the end, too. Yeah, hundreds of illustrations, actually. And
do you remember your first real canon character, your film character that you had to draw?
Oh, wow. Yeah, let me think. It might have been Darth Vader. I mean, I did lots of stormtroopers and stuff. But, I mean, yeah, I, working for West End Games on those role-playing game books, I didn't too often get to work with the film characters. But, mm-hmm. I mean, every now and then, you know, I do stormtroopers fighting a bunch of, you know, random rebels and stuff like that. But I think eventually I got to do a Darth Vader, but it was, you know, I mean, if I looked at that artwork now, I'd want to turn my head. But
that's, Joe, that's really interesting. You're talking about almost like a hierarchy. So when you come in and you're new doing work for a particular company, they're not going to throw the big meaty characters to you right away. Is that right?
Well, it wasn't so much that. It was just the kind of content that West End was producing and the kind of assignments that they just happened to be giving out at that time. I mean, it wasn't so much that because I was a new guy, I couldn't handle these other characters.
Right.
It wasn't so much that, I think. It was just the fact that a lot of what they were producing was background stuff, which a lot of, you know, is still being used today to kind of, by other authors. You know, they're taking that old role-playing game material and using that to kind of flesh out their stories. But,
right.
I mean, early on, no one really knew that that's what West End was doing, and they didn't even know it. They were just, you know, they're taking their turn to play with Star Wars and expand the universe. So, later on, I think once I established myself as a more professional artist, I think then some of the more juicier assignments, I guess, kind mm-hmm. of fell in my lap. So, and with those assignments came the opportunities to work with major characters. So.
Yeah, and I did play the games as well, and probably played with some of your work that I didn't even realize was your work at the time. But
well, that's good if you don't remember it. I prefer it that way.
It was much more, you know, it was kind of creating your own universe within the Star Wars universe. So there was that realm
right.
of delving out into other things. So, you know, after your West End kind of went off the face of the earth, Wizards kind of took up the mantle. Were you able to
right.
stick along with them? Or?
Well, actually, I had to basically reestablish myself with Wizards of the Coast. I mean, I had done Star Wars art very steadily for about 2 years for West End Games, and then they lost the license. And there was a hiatus there for the role-playing game. It wasn't until, I think until Episode 1 came out a couple years later, that Wizards of the Coast acquired the rights and to do the role-playing game. So this was actually in early 2000, I think they started publishing their role-playing game, and I had to, you know, send a portfolio to Wizards. I mean, Lucasfilm at that point was aware of me, and I guess they knew my work, so that gave me an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But I still had to prove myself again. I mean, I had to do some samples. I had to show them my work, and then eventually Wizards hired me for Star Wars Gamer magazine, which was like a supplemental magazine for the role playing game, and I worked on that for a while, pretty much every issue except for like two or three. And that led to doing some other role-playing game work for them, too.
Now, during that hiatus between the time where West End had it and Wizards popped back up, were you doing any Star Wars work at that time?
You know, I remember that period very well because I wasn't doing a whole lot of Star Wars work. I mean, I was doing stuff for myself, for my portfolio at the time. It was about a two-year period, or about a year and a half, actually. And Episode 1 was just coming out, or it was, you know, the hype for it, everyone, you know. And I remember feeling really bummed because, there wasn't a lot of Star Wars art assignments, you know, for me to get. And West End had just lost the license, no one knew about Wizards of the Coast yet, so it was like, I was looking around for Star Wars work, and I remember thinking, man, I really want to do Star Wars. And then I ended up doing some other stuff for, like, Star Trek, which I love Star Trek, but the same.
I get a lot of grief here, Joe, because I like Star Trek. I like that other franchise, too. And,
right.
And between Pete and Dustin, I really get the business.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not ashamed to admit I'm a Star Trek fan, too, because I was really happy to get... I was doing artwork for the Star Trek role-playing game, and that actually was a nice kind of buffer. While I was kind of bummed I wasn't doing Star Wars art anymore for about a year, I was keeping busy doing Star Trek, and so I did some stuff for Star Trek.
Star Trek's a good filler when there's nothing new in the Star Wars universe.
Right. That's kind of how it always is for a Star Wars fan. It's like, when there's no Star Wars, we'll turn on Star Trek instead.
That's right.
Hey, what are you trying to push on us?
A fine addition to my collection.
It's worth a lot to me.
And our collecting segment this week is going to start off with some news from the official website at StarWars.com, particularly the hyperspace side. There is a new video up in the Visit to Rancho Obi-Wan series. This is video number 5 and features Steve Sansweet going through his massive collection of food-related Star Wars collectibles. Food products including everything from the Pepperidge Farm cookies for the Return of the Jedi promotion. 3 flavors. Do you remember them?
I do. There was vanilla, peanut butter, and chocolate. Of course, I didn't like the chocolate, but my mom would buy them because every time she brought them home, I would eat them right away just because they were Star Wars. It was like my favorite thing. So she kept buying the chocolate, and I was just like, oh, okay.
I know. I had thought about, over the years, thought about C-3PO cereal because I still maintain that it was one of the greatest cereals ever. But I totally had forgotten about those Pepperidge Farm cookies till I watched this video. I'm like, oh, now I got to go see if Pepperidge Farm makes something similar, you know, that's not, you know, obviously Star Wars shaped. But he had everything. I mean, they did mention the cereal. He had little containers, plastic containers of rice, soup labels. He's actually removed the labels from the cans or somehow got them from the manufacturer at some point. Now, it's interesting. He did note that he advises removing the food from these things when possible. But you should take it on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, with things like soda cans, you might be able to drill a little hole in the bottom just to get the soda out, because it's eventually going to eat through. But some of the dry things, like the rice and whatnot, he's got it in there, and those things are going on 30 years old, some of them.
Right. And I have to tell you about what my favorite item was. He had the giant Episode 1 Jar Jar head, a chocolate Jar Jar Easter Bunny head that was there.
Did you have that?
No. But I thought, what a great thing. I could sit there and be having chocolate and be thinking to myself, oh, your demise tastes so good.
And we turn the page to Hasbro. There's a lot of Hasbro news out this week. First of all, we have some high-resolution photos that have appeared on RebelScum.com of the comic 2-packs. The comic 2-packs feature Darth Vader and a Rebel Trooper, Grand Moff Tarkin and a Stormtrooper, Chewbacca and Han Solo in Stormtrooper gear. Each one comes with a Marvel comic book. It looks like they're Marvel issue number 1, 2, and 3 with these packs. I really like these. The more pictures I see of these things, the more I like them.
I'm very excited about these as well. I think this is going to be a great line that everybody can add to their collection. And they display great. If you want to open them up, they look great even that way.
Yeah, the packaging is really cool. I was, you know, when they first talked about them and they were talking about them on the round table at Comic-Con. They were talking about the paint apps. I was like, oh, I don't know, but it works. Somehow it works. Even though the Vader's got the red eyes and the blue highlights, because that's how he appeared in the comic, the Stormtrooper's a little different than what we're used to seeing him. But it still works, and it's going to be fodder for all the customizers out there for sure.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Now, I wasn't a reader of the original Marvel series. It kind of went past me, but I really was taken by some of the art, at least the art that shows up on the packaging, I thought was really cool. I love the concept for Tarkin's uniform. The only one that I'm a little iffy on is the Chewbacca.
Yeah, that does kind of look a little bit odd. I can't say as I'm a big fan of it either.
No, it just seems like it's more of an action figure from Harry and the Hendersons. The final wave of the 2006 Saga line has started to show up in stores. Now, this is technically the last wave, or I should say not technically the last wave. We are getting an exclusive wave for Walmart. This is the combo wave. This has got, it's sort of the Naboo Endor Death Star 2 wave. Includes Luke in his Endor poncho and helmet. There's the Endor Rebel Trooper, which comes in a black and white version. The horrible, awful, pea-headed Emperor figure, which we're going to see again here in just a few moments. The Darth Vader from the Final Duel that has kind of a transparent helmet, so you can see some of the skull. It comes with Force Lightning and a detachable arm. In the Naboo portion of the wave, we've got a holographic Darth Maul, which looks to be, I think, a repack of the old Episode 1 Walmart exclusive Darth Maul hollow figure. A Naboo soldier, which does not actually come in a black and white version. I kind of thought that they would do that. Rep Bean, a Gungan official. I don't know what else to call him. He's got the sort of he almost looks monkish in his attire. So I think he's one of the Boss Nass's advisors. Obi-Wan Kenobi with soft goods. You know how I feel about the soft goods on the 3 3/4 line. But I think it's going to be a pretty good Obi-Wan figure underneath that. I don't know how they can improve on the Episode 1 Obi-Wan figure, personally. I think it was a great figure. Also, Gregra, which was the Episode 1 butcher. You'll recognize his line, "Wanna wanna?" Uber. And Dud Bolt and Mars Guo, a two-pack of pod racers. So a pretty decent balance of repacks and retools with some figures that we haven't seen. The Gregra figure, I know. By the way, for those of you who pointed out my horrible mispronunciation of Astromech several weeks ago, it's been noted. I understand. It makes total sense now, but it's kind of like that executor versus executor. I still hear people say executor for Vader's
Star Destroyer.
Thank you. For Vader's Star Destroyer. I don't even know the name of the ship. But it's actually the Executor. Anyway, totally off topic. A good wave, I think, all in all. I know I've got mine pre-ordered, but then again, I'm a one-of-every-figure mint-on-mint card collector. I'm sick.
Yeah, me not being a one-of-every-figure guy, I will pick up several in this wave, but there are a couple that stick out to me as ones that I probably will not. The one that stands on top of all of them that I won't pick up, besides the Emperor, which I have already talked about, that I cannot stand.
I may boycott that one. When I get my case shipped from Entertainment Earth, I may pull that one out and take it outside and let my dog have it or something.
Stick it on the lawn in effigy or something like that. But outside of that one, the other one that's jumped out was the Starfighter pilot from the Naboo portion of the wave. He kind of looks just like a construction Tom, could really be his name. Like, it's just, they pulled him over from the Tonka line and just stuck him in a Star Wars package.
He's probably got a simple name like, you know, Ned or Lem. Speaking of P-Head Emperor, he's reared his P-Head again in the exclusive Walmart DVD packs to commemorate the release of the original trilogy. Earlier last week, there's three sets, one for Star Wars, one for Empire, one for Jedi. The Star Wars comes with a Luke Skywalker, Ben Kenobi, and a Vader. The Empire Strikes Back includes a Stormtrooper, Chewbacca, and a Bespin Han. The Return of the Jedi, you get an extra figure. Well, half of an extra figure. You get Jedi Luke, the P-Head Emperor, C-3PO, and R2. But I think the pricing on this has been pretty good for considering you're getting three or four figures. And if you're looking for some figures that maybe you bought them on single cards, but you need them to open, or you didn't pick these up before, aside from P-Head Emperor, they're all pretty good figures.
And in vehicle news, some photos began showing up for some of the Target exclusives that are going to be coming this fall. Due out are Rogue 2 Snowspeeder with Zev figure, and also Kit Fisto's Jedi Starfighter, which has the green and tan deco on it. And then the one that I was really excited about seeing were the photos of the exclusive Shuttle Tidarium that will be coming out. Probably not this fall, but in the Christmas area, I would believe.
Oh, it better be.
It certainly looks like everything.
Under my tree.
It looks certainly like everything that we're looking for. You know, that on the packaging, it looks fantastic.
The paint looks awesome.
Yeah. And it's going to be huge. I mean, it's going to be huge, just like the... I don't know if it'll be just as big as the original one that came out with the...
The vintage one. And then there was the FEO Schwartz exclusive.
Right.
But I think they're following the same pattern with this ship like they have the other ships, where they keep retooling it a little bit. And I don't know. I mean, if the paint on the part looks as good as the picture on the box, it's going to look incredible. I'm really psyched about this.
Yeah, it's going to look great.
And I'm really excited to see the Snowspeeder show up with Zev. I can't wait, because I'm going to say, Peter, I found them. I repeat, I found them. Also in Hasbro news this week, there will be a Walmart exclusive Mr. Potato Head 2-pack featuring Darth Tater and Spud Trooper in a collector's tin. Actually, I like this a lot. I would have liked it a lot better if they would have included all three of the Mr. Potato Head figures, for lack of a better term. If they could have thrown R2 in there, R2 Potato, I would have definitely bought it, because I've been kind of had my eye on these, because they're so unique that, and there's only three of them, so it's not a big investment here to where, you know, there's going to be one every year. I think they said at Comic-Con at the round table that R2 Potato was going to be the last one. I'm kind of disappointed. I think they could have made a really cool Boba Fett. I can't come up with a witty name right off the cuff, but some sort of Spud, you know, Boba, whatever. But anyway, so they're going to be a 2-pack exclusive to Walmart. It's going to show up November 1st, Darth Tater and the Spud Trooper in a collector's tin.
Do you think having them in the tin will prevent them from growing ears? And to wrap up our Hasbro coverage, photos of Wave 15 of the Titanium series showed up this week. Wave 15 will include the AT-ST with Endor Deco, the Rebel Blockade Runner, Obi-Wan's Jedi Starfighter from Attack of the Clones, Darth Maul's Sith Speeder, and Darth Vader's Sith Starfighter. Now, the one that I really did like about this, I mean, I like a lot of these, but the one that I liked the most is Obi-Wan's Jedi Starfighter, because it comes complete with the Halo Lightspeed Jump mechanism that he uses. Ooh. To go into hyperspace.
That's cool.
So that it looks really cool kind of in the package and squared around like that. So,
well, you know, I'm not a vehicle guy, but I feel for the vehicle folks, because it seems like when things get cut, it always seems like it's a vehicle line of some sort. So I'm all about people buying the vehicles, because we need to help out our fellow vehicle collectors. In LEGO news this week, links to photos of the new LEGO sets on tap for 2007 can be found at rebelscum.com. Sets include the AT-ST Walker, the Clone Trooper Battle Pack, the Droids Battle Pack, the General Grievous Starfighter, the Imperial Landing Craft, the Imperial Star Destroyer, Jabba's Sail Barge, Slave One, and the Y-Wing Fighter. Now, I'm not a collector of the LEGO stuff. You know how I am. I'm a completionist, so if I start a particular line, I have to see it through to conclusion. So that's why I've pretty much focused on 3 3/4 line and Sideshow's 12-inch. But from what I've gleaned over the years, it looks like some of these are re-releases, maybe some retooling, some repaints. The Slave One, I think, is slightly altered to reflect it being under the command of Jango rather than Boba. But so these are all the new sets coming out for 2007. These are all going to be released in January, from what I understand, and they are up for pre-order now.
Pre-orders are up this week at the Attackus website for the statuettes of the Sand Trooper and Ula. Both can be pre-ordered on the site. The Sand Trooper will be shipping in December, while Ula will follow in January.
These look awesome.
And they run along very
well.
They're
huge. What are they, 15 inches?
They're 15 inches. And they are fairly on the expensive side, but when
about
you see
$400 bucks?
Yeah, when you see the actual statues and how much detail there is to them, you can see that it's worth the price you're paying.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a big fan of these particular characters, I mean, neither one of these resonate enough with me to make me part with that kind of money, but boy, some of these detailed shots of the backpack on the Sand Trooper and, well, other parts on Ulo, which we won't get into. This is a kid's show, for God's sake.
Yeah, the chains look great.
Speaking of kid's show, what the heck was Ulo doing in a kid's movie to begin with?
Hopefully everyone got in on Friday's priority pre-order for the Plo Koon 12-inch sideshow figure.
I didn't.
Everyone except for Jason hopefully got in on their priority pre-order.
That's two.
That is two.
Junior.
You're starting to fall behind. Now, this one was really cool, too, because it had a concept gauntlet lightsaber with two blades on one hilt that you hold in one hand.
Oh, just rub it in. Rub it in.
That looked great. Now, if you did miss out on the priority pre-order for the special edition, there is still time to get in on the regular edition of the Plo Koon, which has some great sculpting to it. The head looks fantastic.
I don't want the regular edition.
That'll teach you to go on vacation. Sorry for your luck, pal.
And you even reminded me the night before.
I did. I did remind you.
While we were recording the show.
While we were doing the show. And then called you during the actual pre-order to tell you, and...
Well,
you said, well, I had missed it, and I went back, and it had already sold out. That was less than an hour later, so it didn't sell out pretty fast. So
yeah. Yeah, enjoy it, along with your exclusive Mace Windu.
Let's be childish about this, won't we?
Did all your sideshow news?
No, I can jump into the rest if you'd like.
Okay, go ahead.
Also announced this week from Sideshow and Medicom Toy is a vinyl collectible doll, VCD, Yoda, that will be available for pre-order coming up sometime soon. Announcements from this will be posted on the Sideshow website, so keep your eyes peeled for that.
I'm a little confused here because this Yoda seems pretty realistic from the photos that we've seen. It doesn't have that super deformed look, so I don't know if this is a new line. If anybody out there knows, send us an email at podcast@theforce.net because, you know, our interview with Dustin Roberts last week really kind of inspired me. If I ever get totally fed up with the whole 3 3/4 madness, I might streamline. You know how he's gone after just the R2 stuff? I might streamline and just be a Yoda collector. And this piece actually caught my eye, but I was also kind of baffled by it because it didn't seem like it fit in with the rest of them, which are sort of that like big-headed bobblehead look.
Right. It looks fairly like a normal Yoda statue would.
Right. As normal as Yoda looks.
And finally in Sideshow, tune into last week's Sideshow podcast, where they have a Q&A with the design team behind the 12-inch scale Jabba and the environment that goes along with it. They answer several questions regarding the detail that's going to be put into the set, as well as where they got the inspiration, the creatures that are coming along with it, points of articulation, material that it's made out of, and the mammoth size of this set.
Now, you said something pretty... I haven't listened to the podcast, but you have. They talk about the material that they're making this out of. And I think our listeners would really benefit from this if you are considering buying this, because I believe the regular edition is still available. The limited edition is gone, but the regular edition is still available. If you were a holder or if you had the Elusive Concepts Jabba, which I actually had at one time, you'll notice that it really started to deteriorate over time. They kind of addressed that, didn't they?
Yeah, they talked about they did not use the same material behind that. Now, you actually had this, and it was made out of a covering of
latex.
Latex and styrofoam. And they stayed completely away from that because they said they did, that it was starting to deteriorate. So they decided to go with a different material that would hold up better and wouldn't corrode over time as much like that.
Yeah, I mean, it would have to because I believe this is articulated.
Yeah, there are two points of articulation that they talked about.
In the arms?
In the arms, yeah. Both at the shoulder joints. They did use ball joints for those. So, and let's all be honest, it's Jabba. How much is it going to move anyway?
Well, that's true. And I'm glad that he's fully articulated. I'm going to need that when I'm playing with him at the homeless shelter that I'll be living in once my wife finds out that I bought it. And turning the page to Gentle Giant Collecting, RebelScum.com has updated with detailed photos of the Bounty Hunter Bust-Ups pack, which includes Boba Fett, Zuckuss, IG-88, Bossk, Dengar, Forlom, and Darth Vader. The packaging for the set is going to replicate the Executor Bridge. It's very cool, but when we were at C3, I got to see these bust-ups for the first time up close.
Right.
And you remember what I said?
No, I do not. That was a whirlwind weekend for me. You can't expect me to remember everything.
You don't remember everything that I said. I said I was really disappointed with them when I got up close. They look so great. The prototype photos that you see and the photos that they get at, put up at rebelscum.com, they look great. But when I saw them up close, I was really disappointed. Because you know how I feel about the Gentle Giant mini busts. Totally missed the boat. I'm not going to belabor it every week, folks. I'll try not to belabor it. But at any rate, so I thought, well, this would be a line that I could kind of jump into. They're small. They're relatively inexpensive. But I just, when I got up close, I didn't like them. So I don't know if they've improved them. The photos of these look awesome. The box looks really cool, too, with the detailing of the Executor Bridge. And speaking of statues, three new statues went up for pre-sale at StarWarsShop.com this week, including the Slave Leia statue that we all saw and I believe the community approved of at Comic-Con, an animated-style Stormtrooper statue, as well as the mini-bust version of Zuckuss. Out of the three of these, I bet you can guess my favorite.
Slave Leia.
I was going to say Zuckuss. No, seriously, Slave Leia is, well, it's exciting. Let's just put it that way. It's a very cool statue. I'm interested to know whether or not there were any changes, because I had heard that the version that was at Comic-Con was the prototype, and it actually hadn't been approved by Lucasfilm at that point. And, man, I was wondering if it... I was actually wondering if we were really going to see it be released, because it doesn't leave much to the imagination.
Yeah, we're back to the kid show idea.
Right, but at any rate, it's a great statue. It doesn't look too much different. I can't notice really any difference at all from the prototype photos from Comic-Con. Now, the animated Stormtrooper statue is super cool. It is based on the look of the Stormtrooper as seen in the holiday special and in the Droids cartoon. So all you Trooper fans out there are probably going to be rushing to get this, and it's pretty cool. And then Zuckuss looks like Zuckuss. Yes. And again, all three statues are available for pre-order at retailers like StarWarsShop.com and Entertainment Earth. And in a story related to Gentle Giant, as well as Sideshow Toys, Master Replicas, and Attackus, these manufacturers will be participating in a new look campaign for 2007 to mark the 30th anniversary of the release of Star Wars. Now, what Lucasfilm has done here is they've gone to an independent marketing promotions design team, and they have developed a consolidated look to all the packaging for these different lines to kind of bring a cohesiveness to them all, which I'm a big champion of. I think that the packaging looks great. It's based on Darth Vader's meditation chamber. It is sleek. It is sharp. And as they say in the story, they want it to kind of show off the exclusivity and the museum quality of these items. And they've paid attention to collectors' needs. They're looking at the paper stock. They're looking at the printing to make sure that it's going to satisfy not just collectors that want to take the things out of the package, but collectors that like to keep them in the package and store them, etc. So it's good that they're taking collectors into consideration, both sides of the collecting world.
I haven't really decided whether I'm excited about this yet or not, just from the standpoint that one of the things that I really like about the Sideshow 12-inch is the creativity that they use on their packaging. I think their packaging is outstanding for the 12-inch scale figures that they're doing.
You know, I hadn't thought about that,
and
actually,
I'm hoping that they're not going to change that just to fit in with this line that Lucas is kind of putting out, or Lucasfilm is putting out for everyone. I'm really hoping that doesn't happen, because that they really have done an outstanding job on that. And even though I don't keep the figures in the packaging, it still looks great. I mean, I would actually even just display the packaging.
Yeah, but the packaging is designed, though, that you can easily put the figures back into it. You can keep the packaging in a fairly decent condition, even by, you know, taking the figure out, putting it back in. I hadn't thought about that, Pete. That is a good point. What influence, or what effect, rather, is this going to have on the Sideshow packaging? Well, you just ruined the whole thing for me now.
All the classic battles.
Delta Squad, execute door breach.
Any way you want.
We have all but destroyed the Jedi Knights.
Fight as a Jedi.
The Old Republic is crippled.
Fight in space.
Darth 3PO?
And as we all predicted, the number one game for rental and sales in both the US and the UK is LEGO Star Wars 2, and it shows very little sign of slowing down at this point. The game was predicted to do so well that Microsoft even tabbed the title to be one of the very first to use new packaging that they hope will reinvigorate the PC gaming market. In case you can't wait to unlock some of the special characters, check out our link to about.com, which has a list of codes to unlock special characters. Ben Kenobi's ghost can be unlocked with BEN-917, the Emperor with HHY-382, the Rebel Trooper with EKU-849, and everybody's favorite Boba Fett with HLP-221. Check out the whole list at about.com, and while you're there, check out the section for accomplishments as well. If you're doing pretty well, go over there and tell them what you did.
All right, believe it or not, I have something to contribute to the gaming segment this week. You mind?
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Well, we could have thrown this into the collecting segment, but I think that it fits here because of the release of LEGO Star Wars 2. But apparently what we have is kind of a collectible that just popped out of nowhere and is doing pretty well on eBay and other sources we don't like to always talk about here. At any rate, GameStop, the chain of video game stores, GameStop, and they have some related stores that they own, were offering some Topps trading cards styled after the LEGO characters. Now, for every copy of the game that you pre-ordered, you got a pack of these cards. They were packs of 10, and I think they had two title cards. So they were packs of 12 cards, but only 10 of them were actually relevant cards. The rub here is, to complete the set, you had to get all 15 of these cards. Well, we've had some reports of people that have bought two or three packs, and they still don't have a complete set. And so many people didn't realize that these were even available, and very few people were able to just walk into the store and come away with these, that they didn't pre-order them. So they're actually pretty rare, and they're tearing it up a little bit on eBay, and they're really cool. I'm trying not to look at them too much because I'll sit there and go, I'd like to have those. But they show off the different character combos that you can do. So they've got Boba Sky Solo, Grand Moff Yoda, and characters like that. So they're really cute little cards and a cool, unique collectible to get your hands on. So get them up now while you can, because I think they're just going to continue to go up.
Yeah, this actually relates pretty closely back to the promotion that they did for the original Battlefront release, which was the Battlefront Scout Trooper, which is very hard to track down.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Had the same type of kind of just popped out of nowhere. Not very many people knew about it. And now trying to track it down is a lot more difficult than it would have been.
You have one, don't you?
I do have one, yes.
It's a 3¾-inch figure, isn't it?
It is.
And I'm a one of every figure collector, aren't I?
Yes.
And you are not.
You may be quite indebted to me for some time.
I was once a Jedi Knight, the same as your father. Before the dark times. Before the Empire.
Always in motion is the future. Beyond the Outer Rim.
Master Voss has moved his troops to Boss Pity.
And before we begin our Expanded Universe segment, or EU segment, this week, we would like to address a few emails that we've received, and I'm going to say a very few. I don't want to minimize them, but it's not a great many, but enough that we should address this. So the topic of spoilers has come up, especially in regards to our EU Character of the Week segment. So I'm going to let Pete handle this one here.
We've received a lot of emails that are very happy with the EU segment and want us to continue to expand that. And in order to do that, we are going to have to hit up some information that you may not have been able to get to. Now, we're not going to jump right out and hit every comic that comes out the week it comes out, or even the next week or the next week. We're going to just kind of continue to bring more information to the table for people who may miss out on those EU portions that may not have the time to cover those in their own reading. What we're trying to do, especially with the EU Character of the Week, is cover characters that people want to be brought up to speed on, but haven't necessarily had the time. But these are characters that we've seen, we've heard about, that are popular in the EU, and that
and have also crossed over into action figures at this point. I mean, Hasbro is going to be delving deep into the EU. We've already got the release of Carnage Jackson, Kier Kanos, as well as the announcement that the comic 2-packs are going to expand to include Quinlan Voss. We've already seen the release of Asajj Ventress, who's this week's EU Character of the Week. So these characters are showing up, and a lot of folks are wondering, well, who the heck is this person?
Right. And if we continue to do that and continue to tell these the background stories behind them, it's going to get people into these characters a little bit more. We will try not to spoil the entire thing for you or tell you the whole story. When we're just giving these quick synopsis of this character's backstory, we're just kind of giving a quick overview. It doesn't dive into the intense action that a lot of times will pop up in the stories. The one thing that I can never describe in its greatest detail is the battle between Kyrkanos and Karnor Jax that happens at the end of the first Crimson Empire series. That's something that you have to see for yourself. So, you know, we're trying not to jump over that line of totally ruining the story for you. However, we do want to try and cover as much of the base as we can so that people can be brought up to speed and enjoy those characters from here on out.
Right. We've had suggestions about doing some EU roundtables where we take certain issues, different topics, and discuss them at length. You know, we may be doing some podcasts specifically dedicated to that and those ideas. So all these things are developing. And so we want to keep everybody happy as much as we can. So we're going to continue to try to walk that line of bringing people into the EU, but at the same time, not spoiling it completely. So keep the emails coming. We love them and we read them all. Okay, now that we've said our piece, we've got a couple of new comics in the last couple of weeks have been released. Legacy number 3 and Knights of the Old Republic number 8. Legacy shipped last week, Knights shipped this week, so they both should be at your local comic book shop. That is, unless you live in Northeast Ohio, or Nashville for that matter. I still have not found Legacy number 3. I went to a comic shop down in Nashville, went to the one that we go to up here. I've been to 2 Borders. Can't find it.
Nothing.
Of course, Knights of the Old Republic is your baby, so I know you're going to be out looking for that this weekend. However, next week we'll see the release of 2 new Star Wars books. They'll be available at fine bookstores everywhere. Books include Darth Bane, Path of Destruction, as well as The Complete Visual Dictionary. Now, that one I'm very excited about, The Complete Visual Dictionary. I'm a big fan of those. I've got a couple of them myself, so it's going to be great to have the whole saga condensed into one book.
Yeah, the photos are always great in those, so I'm really looking forward to what they put in that's new and having a one-stop shop, so to speak, of all the information you need from the Star Wars universe.
And if you're a fan of the history of the Sith, you definitely want to check out Darth Bane, Path of Destruction. It promises to fill in a lot of gaps in the whole Sith history. Check them out.
And staying with our Sith theme, we jump into our expanded universe character of the week with Asajj Ventress. Asajj Ventress grew up on the war-ravaged planet of Ratatak in the midst of a struggle amongst its warlords, which included her parents. During the cruel and harsh civil war, Ventress was introduced to the path to the dark side when her parents were murdered by rival warlord Osirka Kursk. She would have shared their fate had the stranded Jedi, Kai Narek, not come to her rescue. Taking Ventress as his Padawan, the two became the favored leaders amongst the populace of Ratatak. Jealous of this, Kursk fed Ventress's rage again when he killed Kai Narek so that he could become the supreme warlord on the planet. Ventress hated Kursk for what he had done, but also despised the Jedi, believing that they had abandoned Kai Narek and left him to his doom. Consumed by her hate, Ventress went on a rampage, killing all 12 of the other warlords, tattooing a black stripe on her bald head for every dispatched foe. Ventress became the sole authority on Ratatak,
a bold claim,
and built a castle for herself to reign from. After Count Dooku's acolyte was killed, Ventress went to where he was holding auditions and declared herself to be the best. But Dooku waited for her to prove it. Ventress went into the arena and took care of all the combatants and declared herself a Sith.
I am Sith.
Dooku knew she had talent, but showed her what being a Sith was all about.
I've been looking forward to this.
And easily defeated her in a duel. Dooku brought her before Darth Sidious, who sent her on a mission to kill Anakin Skywalker. Dooku gave her the gift of her trademark dual curved hilt lightsabers as he sent her off. As she left, Sidious told Tyrannus that it was irrelevant whether or not Ventress actually succeeded in the task. If Ventress killed Anakin, then she was a more worthy future apprentice than he. If Anakin killed Ventress, it was likely that in the course of the battle, Anakin would use his rage, bringing him yet closer to the dark side.
A necessary loss.
Either way, the Sith Lord would win. Ventress led the Separatist forces throughout the Clone Wars. She was the instigator of many plots, including attempting to frame the Jedi for assassinations, unleashing chemical weapons to try and change the tide of the war, and pursuing Skywalker and his master, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh dear.
As they clashed several times during the Clone Wars, Ventress was able to cheat death at every turn.
The dark side is strong in me.
Skywalker first clashed with her on Yavin 4, during which Ventress seemed to have the upper hand, but Anakin gave in to his anger and was able to force her off the cliff to what he thought was her death. She survived and joined up with the bounty hunter Dirge as they clashed with many Jedi across the galaxy, including Kenobi, whom Ventress vowed to kill.
Oh dear.
She became obsessed with Kenobi and tracked him to Jambim, where she captured him. She took him back to her castle, where Kenobi managed to escape and fled. She pursued him back to Coruscant, where she found Skywalker and not Kenobi. She ambushed Anakin and sliced him across the face, leaving him a scar.
I'm all right.
She had him defeated, but taunted him with images of killing Padme.
Anakin, you're breaking my heart.
Giving into his anger once again, Skywalker won back the upper hand and threw her off a skyscraper to what again seemed to be her doom.
My powers have doubled since the last time we met.
Anakin lauded his accomplishment to Obi-Wan, but Obi-Wan believed her not to be dead and set out to find her in an attempt to bring her back to the good side. Obi-Wan tracked her to Baz Pitti, where he found her in a Bacta tank, put there by Count Dooku. Ventress attacked Obi-Wan and Anakin as soon as she sensed them in the room, but was abandoned in her time of need by Dooku, who actually sent a Magna Guard back to kill her. Ventress tried in vain to kill Obi-Wan, but was dealt a lethal blow by Anakin. As they left, Ventress told Obi-Wan of the Separatist's next plan. It is assumed that she perished on Baz Pitti, but no one has been able to confirm that she did in fact perish in the battle.
Play back the entire message.
What message?
Message, Arthur, the message.
The Emperor commands you to make contact with him.
It's a trick. Send no reply.
Well, our listener mail segment is going to kind of get a little facelift here. We have a new, well, I should say our first telephone number here at the Forcecast. You can now leave us a voicemail. Sorry, it's not an 800 number, but leave us a voicemail nonetheless at 330-871-4TFN. That's 330-871-4TFN. And what we want, at least initially here, we want to hear your Star Wars tales. You listened earlier, we were talking to Joe Caroni in the Cantina, and all our guests that we've had through the Cantina, they've all got a Star Wars tale. Maybe it's meeting that celebrity at a convention, or maybe it's a really cool deal you picked up on eBay at a cheap price, or maybe it's like what Pete was saying a couple weeks ago, walking into a Rite Aid and picking up a couple of old Power of the Force 2 figures swinging on the pegs just a few weeks ago. So we want to hear your Star Wars tale. Again, that number is 330-871-4TFN. And if you don't have permission to use the long distance at home, you can still send us an email at podcast@theforce.net. Keep those emails coming. Speaking of emails, you got one right here, Pete.
My email today comes from Jill Benner. Jill says, "Hey guys, I just listened to the 9/15/06 episode, and it was awesome. People are always thinking I'm weird because I'm so crazy over Star Wars, and I'm only 11 years old. But finally, here is something that I can relate to. If it's possible, would you be able to talk about the group of fanboys that's stationed all across the nation known as the 501st Legion. And I hope sometime you can talk about Adia Gallia, my favorite Jedi, and the Trihexalon threat of 22 BBY. See you, my fellow Jedi Knights. May the Force be with you." I have to say that, Jill, I'm right there with you. I was also that 11-year-old that everybody thought I was so crazy because I was always into Star Wars. But guess what? There's probably millions of us out there, and I'm glad you can join us every week to get your Star Wars fix a little bit and have a little chat with us about what's going on in the Star Wars universe.
The email was really well written for an 11-year-old.
Absolutely.
Man, it put some of my emails to shame that I send out throughout the day. I know that. Well, we've got a email here all the way from Adelaide, Australia, and I get just a little tickle in my throat when I say Australia. Watched the Crocodile Hunter's funeral this week, and I was a big fan, so I had to read this one. This is for Steve Irwin here. This is from Adelaide, Australia. It's from Dean. Dean says, "I write to you from Adelaide, Australia, where the Forcecast has quickly become my must-have podcast on my MP3 player. As a community nurse who is on the road for much of the time, I don't have the luxury of sitting down at my computer and catch up on the latest Star Wars news from sites such as TheForce.net, the official site, or RebelScum.com." Great plugs there, Dean. I love that. "Now I can get my weekly dose from your Kick Arse Show and listen away in galactic bliss in my car and feel connected to that galaxy far, far away. I was 4 years old in 1977 when my dad took me to see the Star Wars at the Yalorn, Y-A-L-L-O-U-R-N, Yalorn Cinema in Country Victoria, Australia. Two screens back then. It was the first movie I ever saw, and it changed my life forever. Keep it coming, guys. I love it. We are going to keep it coming, Dean, and thank you for the good wishes from down under. That's one place I'm dying to go.
Absolutely. Hopefully, when the TV series starts up filming down there, a couple of podcasters might get invited to come down there and get a little preview of the show.
Yeah, what do you think, guys? Well, send us your Star Wars tale. You can voicemail at 330-871-4TFN or send an email to podcast@theforce.net. Or if you're on Skype, just look for us at ForceCast.
That's going to just about do it for this week's show.
Big thanks to our sponsor this week, Official Picks. That's officialpicks.com. Go there for all of your Star Wars autograph needs. Officialpicks.com, picks with an X.
We'd like to thank Joe Caroni once again for joining us in the cantina. Tune in next week for part two of that interview.
And don't forget to get those Star Wars tales into us. You can email them to podcast@theforce.net, or you can give us a call at our brand new number, 330-871-4TFN. Again, that's 330-871-4TFN.
And again, vote for us at Podcast Alley. It's free to register, and they won't spam you. And please write us a review in iTunes. Look for TheForce.net.
And don't forget to head over to Movies.com to vote for TheForce.net as your favorite unofficial movie website. So until next week, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
the Force will be with you, always.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of TheForce.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.